This week on RSVNB Update, it's Quest Week with the new Valentine's Day Heartstealer Quest. From our love of questing to fairy ring changes, we put a ring on it all. Then a recap of the important bits of the player avatar refresh and feedback on body types. This is RSVNB Update, episode 816, recorded Thursday, February 11th, 2021. Put a ring on it. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVNB Update. This week, it is just Sirion and myself here. Tanis had another commitment come up late in the day yesterday, so as a result, he's not joining us for this one. But, you know, it's Quest Week nonetheless, and I don't think you could go wrong on RSVNB Update without having a member of Clan Quest on the show, could you?
I mean, it's always good, yeah? I mean, we have someone in a clan who literally is called I Hate Quests, so...
We also have Quests Are Shit.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not sure if it's unilaterally a good thing, but no, generally people like quests in our clan, and they are pretty passionate about it.
Yeah, and you know, in general.
Even a quest like this, people had like lore discussions, things like that, or what was it? At least there was like quite a lot of discussion in our quest discussion.
Yeah, that actually surprised me that you know, we had so much going on. With this quest, so, you know, that's wonderful, but nonetheless, we are going to be discussing the Heartstealer quest this week, as well as the Ninja Strike to Fairy Rings, amongst other things. And, well, I mean, if you're joining us for the first time, get comfortable. Just visit update.rsbnb.com if you want show notes. You can also, of course, find us in-game in Friends Chat, Bits Bytes, and I think at that point we can just dive right in, can't we?
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. So starting off, this is a Valentine's Day quest. Recall last year we had the slime quest. This one is the whole point of this quest is you have the duo from last year's Easter event, and they together want, or one of them wants to effectively find the best Valentine's Day present for the other. And when it comes down to it at the end of the day, what's the best way to do this? Steal the biggest ruby you can find from the Varrock Museum.
Mm-hmm. Naturally.
Very simple. Very simple, of course, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the two we're talking about are Kaelin and Annette. And these characters, I think we knew they'd come back. And last year when we did the Easter event, I think there was a definite resonance amongst the community for these characters to come back. Because it just felt as though back then that these were two different characters and they were going to have their own story at some point. And, you know, that's something we have criticized in the past, is that you do an Easter event and the entire characters in the entire event disappear. Not so last year, and now we have them in game permanently in a quest. So
good stuff.
Yeah, and you know, this quest is a short quest. It's a quest that you probably could knock out in under what you said you did in a half hour or so.
Yeah, I had been watching the stream, so Clan Quest tends to do release day quest streams, and I was watching that and moderating that because I didn't have time to do the quest myself. So I kind of knew exactly what to do in the first two thirds or so. So I got to that pretty quickly, and then the last bit it wasn't hard. So
yeah,
half an hour for me.
And, you know, of course, the heist we're talking about is the heist related to the Varrock Museum. And, you know, but before we get down to that point, there's an exchange between Kaelin and Annette north of the Edgefield Bank. And this is actually a funny part. One of the things that Annette went off to do while Kaelin prepared the heist was Annette went away and was going to sell a golden lawn gnome. stolen from Duke Horatio.
Yeah, there was a bit of a lore gap there, I thought.
Yeah, because
If I may indulge myself for a bit.
We don't have golden gnomes in game.
She was going to go to Falador.
We don't have golden gnomes in game.
We do as pets, so.
Right, but not actual golden gnomes. Anyways, continue.
My lore nitpick. I can't talk. My lore nitpick is not related to that. It's more so. This is meant to be played like what, the day before Valentine's Day, right? Like we need a gift by the next day.
Yeah.
Annette leaves for Falador, which, according to the in-game lore, is several days of traveling away from Varrok.
But she kind of teleported.
Oh, yeah. She might have a teleporter.
She just
used some smoke bombs, right? Yeah. Fair enough.
That's okay. I mean, that's what we do here. We nitpick all this and we talk about all the questions that come up during the quest. And that's fine. That's a good question to have. And I was actually thinking it might be nice if we could get that teleport animation, but I think that's a topic for a different day or the rewards section because we didn't get that. But anyways, we're going to steal this big ruby because Kaelin wants to pick it up for Annette, and to do that we need to sneak into a gala at the Varrok Museum, and in order to do that successfully we need three things. First and foremost, we need disguises, then we need to map out the museum, or as your character calls it, case the joint, which is, for those unfamiliar with capers and thieving, that just basically means, you know, figure it out and map it and figure the best way in, what the guards are up to, and so on and so forth. And then,
so does it mean that you are actually familiar with capers and thievery? Do you want to explain where that experience comes from, or is this confidential material?
I like heist movies.
Ah, fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good excuse.
Yeah, it is.
Wink, wink, wink.
I've never actually stolen anything, believe it or not.
I have.
Oh.
Accidentally.
Oh?
Yeah.
Let's hear this.
I found groceries at some point that I hadn't paid for, accidentally.
Oh, okay. So like an extra bag of carrots or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, okay. Well, I've done that too. I think we've all done
that. Never say never.
But nothing intentional, right?
No, I've never stolen anything intentional. I'm not that. I'm not, no.
All right. So the rabbit hole aside, to obtain the disguise, you go talk to Theosia, the clothing merchant with the gold coins that Kaelin gave you. And the only disguise that Theosia has for you is a pair of masquerading masks.
I love the little callback to the slime quest in this section.
Yeah, yeah.
How Tessalia is like, yeah, I'm basically bankrupt because I made a massive top hat for some stupid reason. yeah, that's pretty much.
And, you know, right when that happened, I actually had the picture of the slime in the top hat in my head from last year.
God. Yeah.
Oh, that was perfect. Anyways, after that, you return to Kaelin, and then you have a choice of what to do next. You can either map the gala, or you can make the smoke bombs. What did you do next?
I think I did the casing the joint. Jointing
okay.
The case? What is it?
Casing the joint. Next.
Casing the joint.
Yeah. And to do this one, you're given a pair of very colorful crayons and paper. And they're called specialist tools.
Super, super high-tech heist this.
Absolutely. And to get this, all you got to do is you just go pickpocket the head of the museum. And then they discover you. And you can either lie about what you're doing or rat Kaelin out. What did you do?
I don't rat people out. No, I don't rat people
out. All right, I ratted Kaelin out. And, you know, I don't think it has any impact on the quest the way it goes. It's a little bit different in terms of the dialogue that you're going to get along the way. So, I mean, if you want to see a something that's a little bit funnier, rat her out. And then after that, you copy the plans, and then you return to Kaelin. And, you know, this, so far it's been very, very simple, has it not?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's okay, because this is a novice quest. This is a free-to-play quest. We should have mentioned that right before we began, because, you know, we don't really get many free-to-play quests in this day and age, do we?
No, I think it's good. And yeah, it's one of these things, right? If there's no reason for it to be pay-to-play, then yeah. Why would it be?
Yeah. And, I mean, holiday event, you definitely want to get as many people in on this as you can. And we're kind of jumping ahead here, and this whole quest was a good encapsulation of what it feels like to do a modern quest, which is important because it gives those people who are playing free-to-play a bit of a taster of what they can expect with the full game. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, smoke bombs are up next, and to do this, all the materials you need are up in the attic where you are. You got some gunpowder, some spare parts for bashing the mechanism, stinky fish for the putrid odors.
Oh, and we had a laugh at that one, the stinky fish.
Yeah, I can imagine why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely think they might have imported some Swedish goods there.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking of. And for those who are unaware, the Swedish folks have this fermented fish called surströmming that is apparently a delicacy, but it's one of the most offensive to the nose things you could ever purchase. And I've never smelt it personally. Have you?
No, and I intend to keep it that way.
Yeah, I understand that one of the Runefests that Clan Quest was a part of at the place where the people were staying, a couple of people cracked one of these cans open on the last day.
And I think we are not welcome back in that Airbnb.
No, probably not. Probably not. Tycho, Tycho, Tycho. Anyways. You know, that would be Clan Quest's own version of a smoke bomb. But nonetheless, in this quest, there's a little mini game that you have to play. And what will happen with this is you got four different areas, and Kaelin will effectively tell you which one to click on. And as you do that, you just got to progress along, do it 10 times. And, you know, if you fail, there's actually an option right away. And I failed because I wanted to see if the dialogue would change on this. I failed a number of times for that reason. But there's actually an option to make it easier right off the bat.
Oh, that's always very nice. I like it when games do that. It's a hard balance to strike. Like, you won't want to have the game dumbed down. Like, you don't want to make it clear to the you are kind of dumbing down the game. Like, you don't want to make that too obvious and don't want to make the player feel bad, but this is actually a super important accessibility feature that is often overlooked in games, right? Like, we often think about, visibility or, colorblindness and those things. But, you know, there is also cognitive disabilities or motor function related disabilities.
Yep.
That, you know, it's really hard to cater for. And doing something like this means that you're not locking, like, quick time events that you have in story-based games sometimes are a great example where you're meant to, like, mash a button really quickly, but there's so many people who can't do that. So, you know, it's great to hear that's, like, it's a tiny little thing. And it sounds like a tiny little thing, but it makes a big difference.
Yeah, and also, you know, with this, you can look at it as a way, as a technical help, too, because sometimes, you know, your internet might not be cooperating, and if you're lagging across the entire screen and you're not able to complete this puzzle, where's the fun in that? So, you know,
yeah,
whether
that's the great thing,
whether it be for that or whether it be for just, you know, straight up accessibility, this is a very important addition to this quest.
That's a great point, because a lot of times people are like, oh, but why would you make accessibility features? It's only like 5% of your user base or even less. But what a lot of people don't understand is that accessibility features help everyone, right? Like, mm-hmm. they're much more widely mm-hmm. applicable than, than people that actually do have a disability. I, for example, almost always use subtitles because English is not my native language. If there's a lot of background noise,
yes,
I can't parse English as easily as someone who is native in that languages. So for me, subtitles are a massive help, and doing good subtitles in a game therefore helps me forward, even though I don't really have a auditory disability. So yeah, you're right, this is a great addition, and yeah, it deserves to be called out, I think.
Very important. And I wonder if there's ever going to be a time where they go back and look at past quests where they would do this accessibility kind of thing on that.
Mm.
Like, I'm thinking of Dishonor Among Thieves, for example. For the coloring and whatnot. Mm. And, you know, maybe other puzzles along the way, say Elemental Workshops or the Morning Zen light puzzle.
Yeah.
Not, you know, to, you know, just provide a quick, cheap way to get through that.
The Sliscus Endgame Mace.
Or that. Or that.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes people are like, but hey, if you make the game easier, then, you know, people don't like the game anymore. Like, you're taking the whole game away. Like,
but it's your choice if you go down that path and you use that or
exactly.
not.
Exactly.
Like, and it's just a question of having that around and accessible. And, you know, if you presented an option with Sliskay's Endgame of, you know, not figuring out the maze but still getting all the lore aspects of it, you know, it'd be interesting to see how many people would take that road, right? So I think this is a very important discussion going forward. And, you know, people could say that it's the dumbing down of the game, but in reality, if it gets more people playing quests, I think that's a good thing at the end of the day.
Yes, no, yeah, I totally agree.
All right. Well, after that, you head to the gala, and with this one, this is where all the fun will begin. You start the heist, and I was a little bit surprised, honestly, that the quest was, you know, seemingly half over at this point, or maybe even a third over when I got there. But I mean, it's a novice quest. It's a holiday quest. I guess I should expect that coming in. But, you know, one thing that I also found very nice that they did for a treatment to just, you know, kind of set the mood is they actually decked out the Varrock Museum for this to make it look a little bit special, as if an actual party was going on there. And they put Varrock into night mode.
Oh, I had that. That's a detail that I must have noticed sort of subconsciously.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the power of these skyboxes.
Yeah. I mean, there were some lights and some banners inside the museum, and the Varrock lighting outside was changed to the night skybox. So, and it really set the mood, I think. And it kind of, you know, just shifted it from being a standard quest to being something that was unique and on its own part, standing distinct from everything else. So I really appreciated that detail.
Yeah, like it's. I think it strikes a good balance between using a familiar location in the game and not just making up a new place, which so many quests do, right?
Yeah.
Like they just add a place, but they reuse an existing place, but they just dress it up a bit differently.
And that's the way it should be, honestly.
Yeah.
Anyways, when you go in here, you of course talk to the masked woman who greets you at the door. Did you know who this was when you first entered? Or at least did you assume who it was going to be?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's Annette. And your character and Kaelin find that out later on. But I guessed that as soon as we walked in. So the core aspect here is to, of course, head down into the basement to pick up the heart-shaped ruby. And, you know, you can't do that because there's security standing watch. So what do you do when security is standing watch? You create a commotion. So to do this, you talk upstairs, and who better to cause a commotion than the drunken dwarf? I appreciate it. You ask the drunken dwarf to cause a commotion, and he says he needs 4 drink tokens for it, which is, you know, quite a lot. And
is it though?
I think it is. How many would you use?
I mean, I would be pretty tipsy after 4 drink tokens. I don't think I would be off my face based on the fact that I have had 4 drinks on the night before.
Or forgetting how to speak English, right?
I did kind of forget how to speak English, but I still remember every second of that night.
Well, that's good.
So I wasn't off my face.
But anyways, talk to the guests upstairs to get the drink tokens. You get yours from the bartender. You can pickpocket one of the attendees to get one. You can talk to the masked woman to get one as well, which is, of course, Annette. And then finally, Mr. Mordeau, because what reason does Mr. Mordeau have for alcohol? And he will give you his drink token in exchange for a cheese platter. Because he just couldn't understand that people make this, as he said, very tasty item from lactating animals. Which, when you think about it, that's cheese. And I'm not a fan of cheese personally, but I mean, that's a very fun way for Mr. Mordeau to describe it.
I'm Dutch. When I was in elementary school,
you made cheese?
We had to do like a work project every year, which ended up with like a little presentation. I'm not sure. It was like a presentation. Like every year you would give a presentation in front of the class.
Sure.
And I did mine about cheese at some point. And I had an amazing presentation where I had like massive printouts of the different steps of cheese that I could hang up on the blackboard and I could point to. It was a really good... I don't forget what grade I got, but it was a really good presentation.
Did you have samplings?
I did actually bring cheese in the end, yes. I had little blocks of cheese. Well, I need to say, I was like 8 years old. My mum had arranged for blocks of cheese that I could hand out. I think I might even have like both... mild cheese and like mature cheese, so like they could taste the difference. And
amazing.
I could explain that the mature ones, like the older ones, I had laid on the plank for longer, so they had more time to acquire a taste. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know.
So I know about cheese.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. And, you know, on the quest.
I like cheese.
To get the cheese platter for Mr. Mordeau, you head downstairs to where the chef is, bring it up to him, and that's where you get that.
Was the hardest bit of the quest for me. I could not find that crate.
Yeah, and, you know, I've been really grateful for the mouse over effects. I just go into an area and run the mouse over pretty much everything. You also put on a fantastic dance show with the wise old man's wife. That was rather amusing.
Mm-hmm.
That was another way of, you know, trying to create a distraction and whatnot. But in any case, after you get the 4 drink tokens, you tell the drunken dwarf to do his thing and cause the commotion. And this is another one of those blacked out cutscenes where you kind of have to imagine what's happening behind the scenes. But someone throws her glass, missing the curator. The curator calls in the guards to get things under control, and people are wondering, are all Gielinorian parties really this violent? So, and I mean, yeah, sure, certainly things can go that way, but the whole point of this commotion is to get everybody to run upstairs with the noise that was made, and then after that, you are free to head downstairs and to access the ruby. There's a little bit of a force field preventing you from doing it, and to do this you need to deactivate 3 different levers, and this is a very traditional, you know, avoid the guard kind of thing, and, you know, hide around, duck around behind various objects, hide in a box maybe here or there, and then pull the lever, and then that will deactivate one or two or three of the defenses. Now, a couple of points on this one. We have always complained in the past about when doing these kind of hide from the guard events, that it's not necessarily clear where you're going to be caught. So one of the things they did with this one is that they added a little beacon that radiates outwards from each of the guards that will now show you what the exact detection radius of that guard is. And this is another good accessibility side on this. And what I think they did really well with this is that it was high contrast, and it wasn't, you know, blue or green, which some people can't see. It was actually red, which I think is able to be seen by the majority of the people, even those who have colorblind disabilities.
I'm not too familiar with it. I actually wonder if you get caught too many times, if you get a way to make this easier as well.
I tried that. You do not.
Okay.
So you are left to kind of figure it out. And I mean, it's really not that hard, I don't think. Because it's not...
No, it didn't seem
like,
so
like
hard,
it's not reaction time-based like the bombs was, right?
No, not really, no.
Yeah.
You kind of have to hit at the right times.
Know where to go and, you know... They're not actually able to see through objects, despite what the radiating beams say. They can see around corners, I think it seems, on this one. So keep that in mind as you're doing this. And, you know, hide in the boxes if the boxes are there. And I think this is a relatively new mechanic. It actually hides your character inside of a box.
Oh, yeah, it could be.
So, all in all, you know, just, you know, take some time doing this. And based on the way this looks, this one took me about 12 to 15 minutes to knock out on this here to do all three of them. So, you know, basically 5 minutes each, taking it nice, slow, and methodical on that. But it wasn't too bad. But after you pull all three levers, the force field protecting the case drops, and you are able to go in there and grab the ruby, the heart-shaped ruby, and then when Kaelin examines it, it's a fake. I was hoping for a Star Trek reference here. Or is that something that doesn't have that deep cultural significance? Deep Space Nine, it's a fake thing? All right, fair enough.
No.
Just Google "it's a fake" and extend out "fake" to make it with many A's in there. But as it's found, this ruby is obviously a counterfeit, and it was placed by Annette, because Annette saw that Kaelin was really feeling down and hadn't had much to do recently and was looking for, you know, a way to get out. And Annette knew that Great Caper was definitely a way that would invigorate Kaelin. And that was the whole reason why Annette placed this there, placed the fake ruby there.
It's so considerate if you think about it.
Yeah, it's almost like these characters were experiencing 2020 with us.
Yes. No, it's I find it quite kind of great how it shows that they're in sync with each other.
Yeah, and you know, most people who are friends or in a very close relationship like that are in sync like that as well. And, you know, I think that's good. And we'll touch on this a bit at the end of the quest conclusion about where we're going from this. And you're wondering, because the curator and some guards come down there and you're basically in a situation where you're going to get arrested. And the way out is that they use that same magic that Annette used to teleport to Falador to teleport you guys out of the basement of the museum. And then you
return back. Yeah, I want more of the smoke bombs.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be good. I mean, we have bombs in game. The technology already exists. We just need a smoke bomb.
Yeah.
So
smoke bombs now also teleport.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
Not entirely sure where we got. I mean, we teleported out, kind of, right? Or did we just disappear really well? I don't know.
Yeah, we teleported out. We teleported out. But
was a little bit of a Pirates of the Caribbean reference in here.
Oh, okay. I've never seen that show.
This is the day you almost caught something. It's very good.
All right, fair enough. And that's quest complete at the end, and the rewards from this are one quest point, the Heartstealer title, and the outfit, both the mask and the actual outfit overrides, cosmetic overrides, that you wore during this quest. And, you know, I think that's very important that we're awarding these things as overrides rather than actual outfits that you can wear. It leaves the armor slots for armor, and it saves us from using keepsake keys, which is very important.
Yeah.
So, overall,
I get the feeling that I kind of like the quest.
Yeah.
I've always said that I wanted to go back to these smaller stories, and this, for some reason, what the thing that keeps going back in my mind is how this almost feels like a D&D adventure. Like, I could definitely see, like, there's a certain silliness to it. There's a certain, you know, the sort of using of the circumstances to create a distraction is very D&D like. You know, the very on the nose, obvious levers that you need to hit for the like it all
the bombs,
has
the smoke
that
bombs.
Sort of exactly. It all has a D&D cheesiness to it. So yeah. That's the first thing. But like I liked it. It was like a tiny bit of a story. I liked the couple. They made it seem real to me. Like you know that it makes sense.
It was
felt
natural.
Very natural.
It was natural.
Exactly, and that's really what we need on these quests, I think. But one question I have, and I have thought about this, and I can't find the answer, is, you know, we have this quest, and then you think back about, and people generally like it, right? Like, I think it's generally received positively.
Yeah, people like these kind of small bodily quests.
But then a year ago, we had the slime quest, which is almost the same, right? Like, it came out of a holiday event, it has you running around, it's a bit cheesy, it's a bit silly. And I get the feeling people really dislike the slime quest. So what does this quest do different that people like this one but not the slime quest?
Because the slime was manufactured. And these are actual characters. Because where did we have the slime before, right? Do you get what I'm saying?
You feel that we have more of a connection to the characters in this quest.
Because they're actual people rather than, you know, just some slime that, you know, effectively came out of the well that started terrorizing the town of Remington.
It feels more natural, this quest.
Yeah.
It fits better.
Yeah, that's it.
I have a theory, and it's a bit different, is that it was maybe also the context that, if you remember where we were a year ago, we were in this year where we got promised 6 quests. We hadn't gotten any quests in like a few months. And then the slime quest came out. And
yeah.
We were like, really? This is it? If you compare that to where we are at now, you know, we are... we got like, what, 3 mini quests in the last month or so. Like, we are spoiled in the number of quests and lore content we've been getting.
Yeah,
so,
lore and everything, Desperate Measures last year.
I think people are like, okay, a silly small quest like this is not going to come at the cost of another quest, right? It's just a little bit, it's just one of many. So I think the circumstances help a lot as well. Like the context. Context is king, basically.
Yeah, and of course, remember also we had the Vault of Shadows mini quest. a few weeks back, and that's on record as saying that, you know, you're going to need Trindine and the lore behind the Vault of Shadows for something that's coming in the future. And I think that the key aspect of lore that the players are invested on is that Elder God storyline and what the hell's happening under the Archaeology Guild and Sentistan. Because, you know, that's what everybody wants to hear about. Everybody loves hearing about Zaros and Sentistan and whatnot, right? So,
well, I'm not everybody then, but...
Well, I mean the bulk of the players out there like hearing about that. And, I mean, they know that that is on the way with the Elder God Wars and so on and so forth. So as a result, having these little bottle quests along the side... I mean, I don't even know if you can call this a bottle quest because they had to create some modify some environments for this. I mean, would you still call this a bottle quest? Given the fact that we had to put some modifications out there?
Yeah, Border Crest have seen to you. But, like, it reused assets, right? It didn't create any new assets or anything.
Okay.
I would still call it a Border Crest. It's just dropping in some new assets. Like, I don't know how easy their editors are to use, but...
Yeah, I don't know. No idea on that. But... overall, I think it was a good quest, and I mean, I think if you had one of these every 2 months or so, I think you'd scratch that itch.
Yeah. And what I think is so important in quests like these is like it makes the world feel less manufactured for the player, right?
Yeah.
When every quest and everything you do is around saving the world, and you're the one, you're the chosen one, right? In this case, the World Guardian, and you know it's fun, and part of why people like playing these games is because they want to be the hero, right? That's a big thing, but it makes the whole world feel manufactured, and I think it's really important that this shows that, hey, while you're not looking, there are lots of other things happening in this world, like these tiny little stories, and you know, we're only scratching the surface with these little things. Like, we just happened to come onto this attic in Edgeville to help them. Very convenient, I know,
right.
But it's so natural, and it makes it feel like these things are everywhere and around the corner.
And, you know, with this, you can also claim a thieving lamp after the quest if you're level 20 thieving from Kaelin. So that's an option as well. And, you know, I think we also just need to touch on the fact that, you know, this is a Valentine's Day quest. It feels natural. And, you know, that's precisely the way this kind of representation should be done in the games. 100% natural. And, I mean, I personally didn't notice a difference. Did you?
I mean, two women in a relationship have different mechanics. Well, I say mechanics. I'm not an expert about this, of course. But, like, men and women are different, so you get a slightly different conversations, but it felt natural. That's the most important thing, right? Like, it didn't feel like it was, you know,
shoehorned in.
It wasn't like, let's replace a male model with a female model and call it a day, right? Like, they were two characters that were written in a believable way, and they happened to be a lesbian couple. Okay, sure, fine. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's... Not to say... With Let's Move On, I'm not to say that we should dismiss the fact that there is representation, but... like, this is the kind of stuff we should just have everywhere.
Yeah, and when you say let's move on, it's because it's done in that natural way that it feels as like, okay, this is 100% normal. I'd expect to see this, you know, in RuneScape. There's nothing to bat an eye at. And
exactly.
You know, the fact we can do that in 2020, and, you know, as far as I know, there was no...
2021,
and the fact that, you know, as far as I can tell, there was no major community uproar about this like there was last time Jagex did something Pride-related, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's like, the timing on this is pretty Well, it's LGBT plus history month this month.
Oh, it is? Okay.
You know, it's the timing of this. I mean, whether it's on purpose or not, I don't know, but it's fortunate, I would say. So, you know, I think it's good. And at some point somebody made a decision to do it this way, and I think it was a good decision. I hope to see I hope to see this trend continue. I think there's many underrepresented groups and there's many projects in which I think a very diverse view would help us all.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's the best outlook to put on this at the end of the day, and you know, realize that there's no specific agenda being pushed. This is just a good way of expressing the diversity of community out there.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with it, the way it turned out.
Me too.
When companies do this, typically, there's always some kind of concern that it might go too far, it might be done in a very bad way, but this was done very well, and I think we can leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think we can move on to the patch notes at this point, or otherwise known as the Ninja Strike for Fairy Rings. And we'll do that first, then we'll talk about the changes to the teleport items and then patch notes. And, you know, the Fairy Ring interface goes back years to, I believe it was the second Fairy Quest, I believe?
Yeah, I believe so.
And we've had a number of changes along the way in the past to make it more usable and, you know, make it easier to interact with, to the point where you don't even need to go to the Zanaris anymore to go on a Fairy Ring adventure. But let's talk about this Fairy Ring interface, because this has been completely redone. And the first thing you'll notice is that there is a new menu on the right-hand side that effectively allows you to just single-click on a destination and you'll be taken to one of your favorite Fairy Ring spots. So there's that. Now, alongside that, and I'm going to go from right to left here on the UI, inside the scroll box, everything is a lot more readable, which, you know, needs to happen in this day and age for mobile and whatnot. We need to be 100% clear on that, is that I think the main reason that, in addition to regular ninja fixes that you do, or rather, as I was saying, in addition to, you know, just sprucing up the Fairy Ring set up and the ninja team looking at user experience like they said they were going to do with this. Oh boy, I just activated Siri for some reason. I don't know what I said, and it thought I was talking to it. But in any case, the ninja team looks at UX, which is good. They do that with all the updates. But this one also, I feel, has a specific mobile trend towards it of making all the menus and whatnot bigger, which is important on the right-hand side. Now, let's start by talking about the favorite star. You have these stars right immediately next to the list. And with that, you can click on the star and you can add that to your favorites, which, you know, it's not immediately clear that if you click on the star, it will add it to your favorites. So that's point number one. Is this nitpicking?
Yes.
Or should there be a feedback when you mouse over one of the stars?
Yes.
Okay, so there should be a piece of feedback. Okay. Because I wasn't sure if I should be nitpicking that. Because as it is right now, I mean, there's no clear way aside from right-clicking on the desktop to know, or long pressing, what's going to happen when you press that star. But if you press that star, it will add it to a favorite. Overall, I don't really have many problems with the right-hand side of this menu, do you?
Not really, no.
Okay. Then, on the left-hand side, the Fairy Ring wheels have been changed. Of course, the whole idea behind this, and you know, I even agree with this, is that the old lettering was very hard to read. to the point where, you know, some of the letters were upside down. The letters weren't clear as to what they were. You know, if it was upside down, the L kind of looked like a J and vice versa. But now the menu will completely keep the letters right side up, and all of the letters are distinct from what they were before. So that's a good thing. Now, when it comes to the actual styling of these little letter buttons themselves, it doesn't really fit with the rest of the game, does it?
No. No, it doesn't. It feels wrong somehow.
I know there was more you wanted to say on that.
Oh, yeah, well, not necessarily on the style, but...
Not on the style, but just in general, the way the flow works, right?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk about the accessibility part of this, I think.
Okay, like the contrast. Yeah, sure.
The contrast on this is, I'm looking at both interfaces here side by side, and the contrast was not great on the old UI either.
No.
The new one seems to be a bit of an improvement, but I think if I were to throw this in a red-green colorblind filter, I could not read this. Actually, I might be able to do that quickly.
Yeah, and if you have a screenshot on that, that'd be good, because it's unfortunate that Tanis can't be here for this. And, you know, I think one of the things that we can take away from this on our interaction with this is that, yeah, the text is bigger, the text is brighter, and, you know, it pops out more for us. But, you know, what does it do color blindness wise, right? Also, I forgot to mention that you can also now sort the list by code alphabetized, location alphabetized, or just your favorites 1 through 10. And, you know, I think it works well, for me at least. And, you know, color blindness aside, it's just a question of consistency. Like, it works wonderfully. It's actually a lot less time intensive to wait, because you remember how slow the wheel used to be to get it.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Yes. Trying to find the colorblind thingies.
And, you know, just looking at this, the way if you actually click a lot, it actually feels like you're actually spinning a wheel, which, I mean, is good that the fact it's that responsive. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, I'm just looking. It's not so bad, actually, as I thought, if you look at the color blindness.
Yeah, because I think the yellow contrast is very important there.
Yeah, so I'll send you a screenshot. That's, I believe, red-green color blindness, which is not so bad. All the ones I can check here are actually, the new UI is actually better than the old one, so maybe my concern wasn't unfounded.
And I think what it comes down to is the fact that all the text is actually lighter this time, whereas the text was black before, right? Mm.
It just feels to me like, looking at it, it's a bit of an eyesore, but, you know, maybe it is an eyesore because they chose colors that are a bit more readable.
Right.
So I retract that piece of feedback.
And you know what it is, actually?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to show people what it is, and I just actually realized why they made the... when they made it with the texture they did. The texture that they used Those are mushrooms.
Oh, yes. That I knew.
Okay. I just realized that. Whereas I thought they were just very colored discs, and that's all.
No, they've been mushrooms for a long time.
Okay. Well, I mean, there we go. I just thought they were colored discs. Oh, boy. All right. Oh, yeah, and one final thing. The interface actually shows how many you've discovered. I've discovered 44 of 54.
Well, I haven't checked yet.
I wonder which ones I'm missing. I don't think I'm missing any useful ones.
I don't remember the last time I used a fairy ring.
I use it when I go mine Bane at the Glacier area up north.
Yes, I use it then as well, yes. Which I haven't done in a long time.
All right. Well, overall, these changes to the fairy ring system seem to be a success this week, and I'm actually going to check it on mobile before we as we move on, because I think that's going to be a very important thing to do. But we can move on to other general changes that were done this week for the achievement diary items, I guess we could say. So we have the Big Book of Piracy. There's new charge caps for this. You get 10 charges for completion of Pieces of Hate, 20 charges for the Mauritania Heart achievements, and 60 charges for the Elite Mauritania achievements. And drinking Brain Death rum with the book in your backpack or using the rum on the book will charge it to its maximum charge cap.
I think it's great. Like, I think this is a great change. And this one and the other items we are probably going to be discussing next is they had so few charges, it always felt a bit of a waste to use a charge, and this sort of brings them back into actually being useful. So
yeah,
I really applaud this change, and it adds even more value to finishing the task sets I think we could do with.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. These items we're going to be talking about, I don't really use them.
No, me neither, but I'm not going to feel so bad anymore about using the Book of Piracy to get to Troubled Viewing next time.
All right. The Enchanted Leer can now have a maximum of 60 charges. Bass and sharks give 20 charges. Manta rays give 30. Sea turtles give 40. Remotely charging the Enchanted Leer from the Fremnic Sea Boots now gives 10, 20, and 30 charges from the fish above. Completing the easy achievements will cause fish to give an extra 20 charges. Leers can now be charged at any point rather than at zero. You can now change the teleport destination from an option on the leer itself instead of having to visit Olaf. That's a big one.
Oh, good.
The check teleport option now shows the amount of charges remaining alongside the chosen teleport location. And a new option has been added to the Strange Altar to automatically use any relevant items to charge the leer in the player's backpack.
Cool.
Mauritania legs, 5 for medium test, 10 for hard, 20 for elite. Remaining charges are shown as a tooltip, and the number of charges also appears in message when using the legs to teleport. So just increasing the amount of charges available based on the number of tasks that were done. The Scepter of the God now has new charge caps of 10 for base, 20 for medium desert tasks, and 60 for hard desert tasks. You can charge it at any point rather than zero charges. And with the above change, the charge value from Pyramid Plunder items has been adjusted. Jeweled items will now give 10 charges. Jeweled gold items will now give 6. Gold items, 1. And stone items give a half a charge each, so 2 will be required for 1 charge. Charges will never be wasted, and jeweled diamond items can still be used on the scepter at any point. The scepter will also give you a warning when you're low on charges, and messaging surrounding the scepter has been changed to info boxes for better visibility.
Cool.
And, you know, this is important because, you know, once again, when was the last time you used this item? Very rare. Right? but it's very
I don't have a scepter of the gods, I think.
Okay. It's very important for people who are leveling up. So, Varrock armor teleport to Bork's lair is now unlimited, and they added a do not ask again option for any teleports added after the first on any given day. Overall, I think, you know, getting around with these kind of questy treasure, or sorry, not treasure trail, achievement-based items is some changes that were needed. And for people who are, you know, mid-level or maybe even, I think Iron Man are actually going to take a big benefit out of this.
Yeah.
As well. So, good changes. And, you know, these are the kind of things that you and I are, you know, the regular player base who's maxed and, you know, competing in the game and doing PVM aren't going to think of every day, but they're very important for new players. So very well done to the Ninja team there. Moving on to general patch notes for the week. Coming back from the Ninjaversary last week, a set of deadly weapons from the Turtle Combat mini-quest somehow made their way onto the Grand Exchange. The ninjas have now removed this listing and are pointed fingers at their pet Chinchampa for this incident. Oh, amazing. The quest system is no longer dependent on the old achievement system. If you are currently tracking a quest or a removed path, invalid IDs will be cleared from the activity tracker next time you log in. And quest achievements and paths consisting of quests that have been temporarily removed from achievement paths, they'll be restored when the path system is rewritten to work with the new achievement system.
And I mean, this is like one of these things that doesn't sound like a big deal, but yeah, I can promise you there's a lot of work going on there.
Oh, yeah. Anytime you're talking about rewriting systems.
It's going to make a big difference in the long term if people can use a better system to, you know, create achievements for quests and implement new quests in the first place. You know, everybody wins.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a link to one of ModStu's Reddit posts going on about this all the behind-the-scenes work. So. Mm-hmm. Can give that a read if that affects you. Next up, the Vault of Shadows mini quest has its difficulty changed from novice to experienced. Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely not a novice. No. What is it?
No.
You eat like a...
That puzzle's not novice, and Archaeology 58 is not novice either, I'd say.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, Elin and Prif has finally achieved 99 archaeology and has her Max gate back, and Max
Max won.
Yeah, Max no longer thinks he doesn't have 99 archaeology, and you know this is weird. I would have personally thought that there would have been some kind of check that would have been done for both these characters to get them at the same time. But I guess when you have such a huge game, that's just something that could be missed, right?
Yes.
Texture sizes around the ranch out of time have been reduced to help with crashing issues. Okay, I've never crashed there. Perhaps we're talking about folks who have low GPU memory. Maybe.
Could be.
Tooltips for dwarven tools now show which mode they're currently in. These are, of course, the treasure hunter-based tools that you can get that either give you double XP or double items. The support cape will now, they're fun to use on Yak Track. The support cape will now show the right-click options for the Dungeoneering and Slayer perks when the player has logged out and back in again.
Interesting.
You know, I never looked into these capes before.
I have them.
Do you use them?
I don't think. No, not really. I think I get two bonuses, right? So I think I've considered it, but then I got my max gate back. I'm like, whatever.
Has the same stats as a skill cape. And the support cape...
I think you can assign two perks to it, right?
Yeah, you can. They can hold up to two of those skill perks. Your max cape can hold three, and okay, so it's just the regular perks then, right? So it's kind of a stepping stone between that and max.
Yep.
All right. Interesting. And they have the same stats as a regular skill cape. Which I think max is still better, right?
You're asking someone who does not do PVM.
I just expect you to know these things behind the scenes.
Ah. So not only do you think I'm secretly a J-mod, you also think I'm secretly a top PVMer. Okay. I'm flattered that you have these high expectations from me. But I'm sorry to disappoint you.
It's not me, it's the listeners that do.
Oh, well, the pressure is on now. Oh boy.
Okay, Solak should no longer randomly choose new targets during the encounter. Player movement will no longer be delayed when trying to move during a channeled combat ability. That's good. Anytime.
Oh yeah, that is really good.
Yeah, anytime. That is really good. Because what would happen is you'd have to wait a tick for the ability to stop, right?
Oh, it could be. This is especially important for those abilities that drain your health, right?
Yep.
Like those tentacly ones.
Yeah. Completing the desert task sets will now offer a broadcast. NPC enemies will no longer show incorrect values when using the monster examine spell. And they have removed an issue where Beast of Burden were displaying duplicate take Beast of Burden options. And in other changes, the Act Track notice boards have been removed from the game world, and Squiggles has escaped. Whoever Squiggles is. I don't know, but there's the patch notes for the week. Oh, Squiggles was a rabbit who wandered around Lumbridge Crater that had no combat level and could not be attacked. Fascinating.
Oh. Well, the more you know.
It was just added on February 8th. Interesting. All right, so, you know, we talked about the player avatar refresh a number of weeks ago, and this is an update that is ongoing development-wise, and they have actually posted a bit of a behind-the-scenes post on this, effectively recapping what we saw in that live stream from a few weeks ago, in effect also just updating the wider community who don't watch live streams of where they're at on the production timeline. And of course, they're at the proof of concept stage right now. And, you know, we saw those examples a few weeks ago of the clay models and then the stretches and whatnot going forward, and then what everybody looked like wearing the various outfits in game. And, you know, we had some feedback on that, and, you know, it appears that there's also some community feedback as well. So overall, we got a bit of a preview here from the live stream, a bit of a gif from the live stream of the character in Everlight, just seeing the light bounce off of the new model. So, you know, this is all pretty much that was seen in the live stream from a few weeks back. So give this a read if you haven't watched that live stream or listened to our episode on that. But we also have a section here on covering player feedback. And you weren't on this episode when we talked about this. Is there anything you want to chime in with about the player avatar rework that you've seen on this post so far that we might not have had a chance to talk to you about?
Not really. I think you were spot on with the feedback. I think, you know, for all the positive talk we had about representation earlier and, you know, how invested Jerix is in, like, mental health and, like, I think the somewhat unrealistic body types they are implementing might not be the right choice here. You know, I want to say that I would like to be as ripped as this male avatar, but it doesn't even look healthy anymore. Like that,
no.
It's a bit over the top, and you know, I think sure, like this is I accept that this is a this is the hero at max combat, sure, you're probably a pretty strong person, but
120 strength.
120 strength. You're probably a pretty strong person, but even then, I think yeah, toning this down a bit.
And just having the choice for the player, right? Because
I accept that it's a lot of work to have multiple body types,
right.
and supporting all that stuff. I'm not asking for that, but I'm just like, I wasn't not asking for a blob that's just too generic, right? Like there can be some there can be some muscle, there can be some shapes there, and I think they go about in this post about, you know, how there's actually light bouncing off in different ways, making more look more realistic, and I agree with that bit, but you know, not every player has to be a bodybuilder.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we said in the summary of that live stream last week. Yeah. Is, you know, the male model,
and the same for the female character, right? Like not everybody has to be
too thin.
Catwalk supermodel, like that's just not realistic. And honestly, like the first thing when I thought about this, and I know people who would really appreciate it, is something in between, like a non-binary option would be.
Yep,
that would be such a great move, because I know people who would not be comfortable with either of these two options. So, I mean. I'm definitely cis, but if I look at that male avatar, I'm like, whew, that's a bit much, maybe. So, you know, I know it's early stages, and we're just looking at what we can do, but yeah, like I said, I don't really have anything. I'm rambling now, but you've summarized it all on a previous episode, so I wholeheartedly agree, and I hope there's still room to apply this feedback going forward.
Yeah, and you know, they said since the live stream back in January, they've been taking this feedback on board, and some of the changes are going to focus around masculine body shape changes, including reducing the width of the shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure, that's the worst thing about the,
yeah.
Like it feels like I mean, it's hard to say. Like they also say feminine body type improvements.
But what that can mean so many mean, things, right?
Like, yeah. Very generic. So, I mean, I guess we'll have to see. Like you said, Mod Iro. Is it Mod Iro?
I think it's Iro.
Yeah, or Iro is the character from Avatar who his name is probably based on. Mod Iro, who works on this, seems really passionate. So, I'm assuming he's trying to do the right thing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming intent there. So,
yeah. Also, better balancing of hand size with the overall model by delivering new tech improvements.
Oh, interesting. I'm guessing the hands are really big right now, because otherwise they can't really show you grip, like grabbing things.
Yeah, yeah.
Fascinating.
I'm
really looking forward to like the new outfits. I think the standard outfits, like the blacksmith outfit and the herbalist outfit, and like basically one for each skill, they actually look really good. Like they really hold up still today.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it's just and I mean the things they're adding are just, you know, that little bit of texture and that little bit of depth to it.
Exactly. You know, and I'll definitely be going through these options and seeing if there's some cool thing for my character. So I'm excited, and I mean I'm excited about the hair options as well. Like that's gonna be fun.
Yeah, and we all know how difficult hair can be.
Yeah, so I'm super excited about these kind of projects. I things that are so fundamental to a game often get overlooked, but Yeah. Was the last big update when everybody got eyes and a nose?
Yes.
And mouth?
Years ago.
And wasn't that a please correct me if I'm wrong, but if I remember correctly, that was a surprise update as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, everybody was like, what the
it
heck?
It was new chat heads. It was new chat heads, I think what it was. Because I think before the chat head used the same model that your character in-game used, if I recall.
But even the in-game face model was updated at some point. I'm sure.
Yeah. I don't know when. I mean, it just feels so long ago at this point.
Fair enough. Anyway, I'm rambling, but this is one of those projects I'm super excited about. Like, any graphical rework I'm excited about, because there's so much in the game that deserves more love and deserves to be updated and truly appreciated again.
100% agree with that. They say, yes, Mod Iroh can even be more enthusiastic.
I just love looking at the passion of people like this just doing their job.
Yeah. And, you know, he was very zen-like and just, you know, explaining it from his perspective. And you can tell that he gets it, which was so important for this, you know? And they say the positive comments have been amazing on this. So I look forward to seeing what's next. And they actually have already announced that on February 23rd, they'll be doing another player avatar refresh live stream. And they'll be talking about player feedback. And they're going to have a look at the proposed final avatars for both masculine and feminine body types.
Cool.
As well as the final masculine and feminine blacksmith outfits, progress on hairstyles, and progress on other outfits.
Definitely sounds interesting to me.
I'm a bit surprised that we're seeing the word final put out so soon on this, for the body type, at least.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
It feels very early on from what we've seen on this.
I mean...
But, I mean, they've obviously been working on it well, you know, past through 2020 and whatnot. But
it must be, and even then, you know, it's probably for the better that these projects don't get revealed like right away.
Absolutely,
to us, so.
Absolutely. Oh. Alrighty, very important stuff with that, and I'll be eagerly awaiting February 23rd for that one. And, you know, alongside also in that period, Double XP is returning on February 19th for 10 days until March 1st, perfect way to end out February. We knew this was going to be on the way, and it was going to be at this point in time. So
I was 1 week off of my guess of when the announcement was made. So I'm getting better at it.
But, yeah. And, you know, with this, I can also say that we got our roundtable. We'll be doing that on the 20th because, you know, it's always fun to do roundtables on Double XP weekends or Double XP live events. So should be some good fun.
And these are open for everyone, right?
Yes, these ones are open for everyone on Double XPs. You going to do some archaeology with that, or are you still not doing archaeology with any
boosts? Nope, I have not used a single bit of bonus XP on archaeology. And, you know, I'm getting to the
point
where it's a bit
grindy. Not
even that
double precision?
Nope.
Wow, okay.
I'm doing it my way, and
yeah, that's good.
It sounds silly, and I kind of wish I could just opt out because.
Well, you can just hit the pause button.
Until you get close to the end, and
it turns on for you, right? Yeah.
No, but like just a few weeks ago, I got these Twitch skilling boosters, which you couldn't bank, so I popped them, which meant I had like 5 hours of 50% extra XP. Didn't want to use it on archaeology. Then we had the skilling week, like the week of skilling in the anniversary. Another 50% on my skilling. And, you know, I just want to do archaeology. Well, I guess the hard way, the Iron Man way.
Yeah.
I don't want to play a full Iron Man.
Yeah.
But, yeah. They need to make an Iron Man light mode for me.
Yeah, I agree. And it's important because, you know, it just feels like with Iron Man mode, you tie your hand behind your back, but at the same time, there's, you know, not enough consistency around it. But that's a topic for later. But in any case, we're going to move on and talk about our picks of the week. But we should also thank our Patreon supporters for this episode, because, you know, without you guys, we wouldn't get to do our wonderful monthly bit that we did talking about the 20 years of RuneScape Part 2, 2011 through 2020. That was a real fun one. So many fun things to look back on. And of course, we do our round tables. Those are so fun as well. And you can learn more about this at patreon.com/rsbnb. And I'd like to thank this week Andrew C., Brock H., Cameron, Kristen S., Cook Me Plox, Diana, Duramax, Gabrielle, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Joe M., John P., Keski, Kyle, Lucky Ducky, Nora, Pernasius, Rastafa, Ricky A., Samantha R., Soupfinder, Stabeve, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you, all of you, for your support. It truly does mean the world to us in allowing us to do just so many fun little things each and every month that we wouldn't get to do otherwise. You know, monthly bits are some of my favorite things to do, as are the round tables. And if you want to gain entire access to the back catalog of that, you can find that at patreon.com/rsbnb. For as little as a dollar a month, you get access to that entire back catalog. You help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you'll get a special VIP rank on Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo versions of the show in addition to everything else. And, you know, you want to go up all the way to the $5 tier, you'll get a shout-out each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use for the clip show at the end of the year, which, you know, kind of makes sense at this point, given we're only 2 months into 2021. And, you know, Tannis and I are going to subject ourselves to some pain should we ever reach the $500 a month tier. You've opted out of this, but we're going to order a Hot Ones kit and we're going to subject ourselves to some very, very spicy wings.
I tried volunteering, but you
said no. So, but you know,
I'm not going to voluntarily submit myself to pain. I mean, I already go through some form of pain on my live stream, so. No, don't gonna choose more.
All right, fair enough. And, you know, if you want to learn more about this, just head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much, everyone. All right. So, picks of the week. And, you know, this is the segment of the show where we can share something we're using. We can share something we found interesting in an article. We could talk about an app or a movie or a game. And I'm going old school with this one, moving us into the tech news direction on this one. And this is it's an article that, you know, I think everybody should be aware of at this point. And what happened this week is that Tesla, the company owned by Elon Musk that's famous for its electric cars, has bought upwards of $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin and accepts and plans to accept Bitcoin as a payment going forward for its products. And, you know, we've all been watching what Elon Musk has been doing about championing cryptocurrencies online and whatnot. And, you know, just a quick reminder for what it is. Effectively, a cryptocurrency is like cash, except it is mined using very powerful computers. And when you find a Bitcoin or a fraction of a Bitcoin in this day and age, it goes into a wallet. And every Bitcoin that is found is stored, or rather the record of it is stored on something called the blockchain, which is a very elaborate database. That's the best way of thinking about it. And currencies are also stored on the blockchain, and it is effectively the modern version of cash that can't be traced. And, you know, a lot of people in the standard, or rather traditional finance industries, take issue with Bitcoin because of how it's just appeared. And, you know, there's this value being assigned to this currency that was effectively invented out of thin air. And, you know, there's lots of question going forward about what role Bitcoin is going to play in our world. And, you know, I personally have my concerns about Bitcoin becoming a major player in the global currency space based on, you know, let's just say the security aspect and the economic aspect, which is out of the scope of this article and what we're going to talk about here. But the point I want everybody to take home from this is that the fact that Tesla purchases $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin and intends to use it and accept it as a currency has effectively just normalized Bitcoin as one of the currencies of the world. Whereas before it was, you know, kind of relegated to corners of the internet and the like. So this is kind of an interesting story going forward, and we'll have to wait and see if it takes off as Tesla and Elon Musk are hoping it would.
So this might show my ignorance about blockchain technology, but you say it's untraceable, but isn't the whole point about blockchains that everything is sort of traceable and that you can – that everybody can verify that your Bitcoin is legitimate, right? Because the whole point of blockchains and Bitcoins is that it isn't a single server somewhere that keeps track of who has how many Bitcoins, right? It's decentralized. So right. Everybody sort of, like, the information you need to verify that you own that Bitcoin is embedded inside the blockchain.
Yeah.
You can't fake that.
No.
So if I had a Bitcoin and I needed to pay you, what I would give you is I would give you a part of a blockchain that proves that I own that that Bitcoin, because you can't fake the data in a blockchain.
Right.
Mathematically. So the only way I could have gotten a hold of that blockchain is by actually owning the Bitcoin. That's my simplified understanding yes.
And you're right on that. And to clarify what I meant by untraceable is that if you wanted to, you could put your vault inside of an encrypted volume, whether it be a TrueCrypt volume or some other form of encryption. And as long as it's in that vault, people will know it exists, but they're not going to be able to find it.
Right.
That's what I meant.
But like, let's say hypothetically, if I do a really awkward purchase on the internet, like a pregnancy test using a Bitcoin,
that'll be on the blockchain.
That will be on the blockchain. So does that mean that my purchase history is completely open and out there for everybody to read, at least who I transacted with? How does that work?
You know, I've never used Bitcoin, and based on the way I understand it, that's the way it would be. But I would think that there would be some kind of privacy aspect involved with it, right?
Yeah. Perhaps, like, from what I understand, Bitcoin addresses are not fixed, so you might just rotate to a different addresses. But, yeah, that sounds weird. I mean, I think it is interesting. Like, the philosophy behind it is really interesting, right? Decentralized aspect of it, because it sort of coincides with this movement that is removing trust in centralized organizations, I guess. I think that at some point there's going to be a crisis of some sort, and if there is no central leadership of this blockchain to handle that crisis, then I don't trust the internet, say, or the community or society to figure out problems. So I wonder what's going to happen when Bitcoin really hits its first massive bump.
Right. And, you know, that's why other various types of currencies were created, like Monero is an example that anonymizes users, whereas Bitcoin itself is public. So we were talking about Bitcoin, but there are other options out there. And there's actually an article here on Investopedia that talks about six different currencies that are more private than Bitcoin itself. So you are right on that.
Excellent.
On that front. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see where this goes. And, you know, there's lots of people out there who got in early on this. I personally know of one person who started mining very early on, and you know, they're a few degrees of separation away from me, but I know of them, and they were effectively able to build a retirement fund on Bitcoin.
Wow.
Yeah. Because, you know, when this whole thing started years ago, you'd be able, you know, just throw your old quad-core CPU at it, and maybe if you want to go a little bit ham, throw your GPU at it. But nowadays, you need entire arrays of GPUs to actually mine anything worthwhile. And it's very rare for one person like us to, you know, just throw their regular computer at it and, you know, have a huge takeaway from it, just because there's...
It's just... I mean, maybe in the future, like, some historian will look at it, and in general, I think, you know, it is interesting how the idea of Bitcoin basically started making computing power so much valuable. Like, the prices of GPUs has shot up.
You're telling me.
GPUs are really expensive these days. Like, they were sort of getting cheaper over time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, creating this demand. This...
Like, just to give an example of currency wise of where we would go, I normally in the past bought the X70 version of the NVIDIA GPUs that came out. But for two generations, I wasn't able to when I was upgrading because Bitcoin and crypto in general had made those GPUs expensive that they priced me out of the market.
Mm hmm.
So, but anyways, you know, just something for everybody to keep an eye on. It's not this month's GameStop, and I'll just leave it there. What's your pick?
So, my pick, I called it the Game Developer Appreciation Happy Hour, which is something I totally came up with myself just before the show. Yes, this is going to be a bit of a ramble, but, well, what else is the pick of the week for me at least, if not to have a little bit of a ramble? It was inspired by a tweet by CD Projekt, who is the developer, I believe, of Cyberpunk, which, of course, has
and the
gotten...
Witcher.
And of course, The Witcher as well. But Cyberpunk is the one that is, you know, it is it's the big one. And it had so much hype, and people really wanted it. And it was quite buggy and disappointing, and people weren't happy. And so now Cyberpunk got, or CD Projekt got hacked with some ransomware. And yeah, this is almost certainly related to CD Projekt, and I've not really kept up with the story. I'm pretty sure it has more things have happened since I first read about it, but it made me think about sort of the level of entitlement that exists within gamers. How, like, we have talked about this on the show about how churn is a thing now these days, right? In games, in the game industry. And churn is that often to make a deadline in the games industry, you're required to work, to overwork, basically. Work weekends, work late in the night for the weeks before the game is finished to finish it on time. Which is, of course, it leads to burnouts, it leads to physical complaints. It's bad, right? Like, anyone you ask, is churn a good thing? It's going to be like, no, right? Like, we know it's a bad thing. And I think even most players will say that churn is a bad thing. And yet it has become really prevalent in the games industry. And I think it is because expectations have grown so high, right? When a game comes out, we expect it to be the perfect game to hype up. And because so many games come out, the only way you can get your game to really be successful is by hyping it up like mad. Like, Cyberpunk was the hype of 2020, right? Like, you couldn't place a step on the internet and it would be Cyberpunk this and that. And,
yeah, they've become effectively like AAA movie launches.
Yes, pretty much. And, you know, we've seen games being procrastinated and deadlines being pushed, but in general, like, people want these deadlines to be hit. And when we're talking about they, it's investors, it's publishers, it's those who have the most to lose. It's never the developers. I can assure you that to live and work in the industry that is as harsh as the games industry, you have to be really passionate. So these people really want to put the best game in front of you. And
we can extend that out because it's not just the Cyberpunk people. It's, you know, everybody, you know, even the people at Jagex.
Exactly. Like, there is this pressure from players to launch the perfect product on time at a decent price. And standards have risen. And sure, technology has gotten better, but if anything, the extra technology makes us expect more, and that requires more work from the developers. So, and at the same time, we are not willing to shell out $80 for a game these days.
No.
So we have been stuck at the $60 price point for almost a decade now, I want to say. So somehow these developers have to make better looking games with higher pressures than ever within that price range. It's almost impossible. So when something like this happens, it to me speaks to the difference that we have in perception that these players and the developers. And I think everybody is a loser in this case, right? Like, everybody loses in the Cyberpunk scenario.
Yeah.
The developers weren't able to build the game they wanted to. I'm sure they wanted to ship something better. I'm also sure they probably would like some sleep, so they're probably pretty happy it was launched in that regard. Players wanted a game that actually worked. Investors didn't want the bad press. Like, everybody loses. So what do we do about this? And I think, at least for me, I've not been hyped about a game, really, for a long time. Because I think there's no reason to be hyped about a game until it's ready and out
there. Yeah, and, you know, in some ways, because of that, I think some of the better games to play are the games that you don't have to wait for, that you don't have to invest that $60 to $80 for up front. You know, go for the free-to-play games that have varying degrees that you can choose to invest in them if you want to, you know, accelerate your experience or have a different level of membership, like RuneScape or Star Trek Online, for example.
Yeah, exactly. I think, personally, what I think is one of the big problems is the existence of pre-orders, right?
Yeah.
There seems to be this idea that you need to buy a game before it even comes out, which is an absolutely... It's a super weird concept. Like,
yeah, it goes back almost to the era when you had to, you know, reserve it because there'd only be a certain number of boxed copies available.
Yeah, exactly. But now that it's no longer relevant, right?
Yeah.
And so you get this artificial shortage that developers make by pre-order bonuses. You get this skin if you order before the release date, which, you know, why? this is my question. Like, I don't really get it. Like, to me, whenever I buy a game, especially one that I have to shell out $60 for, I read a lot of reviews and I want to watch a video of the gameplay and see, does this actually look like a game I'd enjoy playing? Because so often I've bought games that I don't end up playing, and it's just a waste of money. And if I had just spent 10 minutes doing some research, I could have saved myself that money.
Yeah.
So,
you know, you're going to the area I want to, that I think is very important next, is that, yeah, we see all these folks like Cyberpunk and whatnot gathering, you know, all the press. But there's so many also other indie games out there and smaller games that you can find on Steam that, to me, in the recent years, have been so much more fulfilling than any of these other big blockbuster-style games. And, you know, one of the ones that always comes up in that mind for me is Factorio.
Yes, absolutely. It's a small team, but you know, they got it right. And it's really interesting. In fact, it's funny you mentioned Factorio. So one of the things that Factorio does is the creators have said is we don't do sales.
Yep.
Because you know it's quite ridiculous that I'm guilty of this. I'll gladly admit this. But it's kind of ridiculous that we look at a game and we're like, okay, I'll put it on my wish list, and when it's 90% off, then I'll get it. Which, if you think about it, is not really appreciating the effort of a developer. And sure, there are some games that I would never play if I had to pay full price for it, right? There are games that I maybe spend a few hours on. I'm not going to shell out like even like $20 for that. But sometimes I pick up a game on sale and I'm like, I would have paid more for this. And so I can see why the Factorio creators decided to just, we don't do sales. You even either pay it or not, and
then you know it's always going to be that price.
So, like I know this was a bit of a rant, but what I really wanted to inspire in people is to give some more thought about this and be a bit more conscious about how you engage on the internet and how you think about these games, because I think that one of the most important things we do with games is we tell a story in some way. It's always about telling a story, about sharing an experience, about, you know, something, right? Like it's an art. And I think the developers deserve the respect for that, and I think they get a lot of shit because they are always under pressure from the players and the publishers, and they do the best they can. And it's not their fault. I think they suffer as much as we do, but they tend to get the shit thrown on them. And that's what happened in this case. And it happens in many cases and in many smaller ways. But whenever you are yelling at a developer on Reddit, then you're not barking up the right tree.
You're not helping the discussion. And, you know, there's good lessons for everybody involved in that. So I think that's important you talked about it, despite the fact it was about a negative story initially. And we've kind of turned it around at that point. So I'm very pleased about that. So we're going to move on to our achievements right now. We have a number of them to talk about this week. Starting off, we have Simply Skells with 99 Herb Lore on February 10th. Prodigal Gaz got 1 at 20 defense on the 9th. We also have Uber Plastic with 99 smithing. Zerdones with 99 defense rounding out the 9th. And then Brappa with 120 constitution on February 8th. And Jag3 Dagster with 99 slayer on the 8th as well.
Luck PPP got 99 archaeology on February 7th. Max quest points. Also got some max skills, apparently, with 99 defense on February 7th and 99 archaeology on February 5th. Then we get Mike Strike 3 getting 99 runecrafting on February the 5th. Keski getting 120 dungeoneering on February the 4th. And Malkior getting 99 crafting on February the 4th. Well done, everyone.
Good job.
It's good to good to see a good amount of 99s coming in, even outside the double XP.
Yeah, you know, we're gonna have a wall on that one, and there's gonna be lots of discussion about what we need to do for that. But nonetheless, we're almost done here. But before we do that, I'll just ask for everybody's help. You know, if you want to get involved with your favorite podcast, if you want to help out, you want to register to be a guest host, you want to write articles for us. Maybe you want to help with some graphics, or you just have maybe some other way that you think you could help us, just fill out this form. Just head over to update.rsbnb.com/help. You know, what kind of RuneScape player are you? That'll help us fill it out and learn a bit about you. And then you just give us your RuneScape name and a place to contact you, and we'll be in touch. Because, you know, we're always you know, we've built up an infrastructure over here, and I've become more comfortable over the last year and a half or so with the way the modern podcast works, that I feel like we can take this step forward and, you know, expand outwards and bring more guests on from within our community, which I think is going to be a really fun thing to do. And I want to do that. So if you want to register your interest for showing up on the podcast at some point, just fill out this form and we'll be in contact with you. Or if you want to help us out with anything else, be much appreciated. So update.rsbnb.com/help.
Do you want to rant about a topic you're passionate about for 10 minutes? Join the podcast, just like me.
All right. What have you been up to on RS, if you want to share any of that?
What I have been up to on RS? Not much, really. I finished Caridat, finally. So that's good. Some back to just collections left and right on archaeology. I've not played much lately. I've not felt it. I did the quest, of course. That was fun. But that's it. I've been doing their weekly live streams, of course, for Clan Quest, but that's not RuneScape.
Twitch.tv/ClanQuest.
Yeah, exactly. I just came from that before this show. So if my voice sounds like it's going, which I think it is, or if I sound particularly tired, that would be why. It's like 4 hours in the saddle is a bit much, maybe, in a row. But yeah, I've been having a lot of fun there.
I think
there,
my record is 8.
Yeah, you're more practiced though at it.
I'm
home on my own all day, so I don't talk that much
right
anymore. So my voice is a bit out of practice.
But, yeah. There's 1 week I did the other podcast, I did Update, and I did RuneFest coverage as well.
Oh boy, yeah, that was a fun one. RuneFest coverage is always a draining one because you're just, you know, herding all the little Clan Quest kittens that keep walking away, and then you have to, yeah, I don't know. But no, I've been having a lot of fun with that. It's sometimes you need a bit of motivation to realize that some of the different games you play can be a lot of fun, especially when shared with other people. Like that's the fun thing about streaming, you get to sort of share traditionally single player games with sort of a community.
Yeah, so, and, you know, just have a good chat with some friends and whatnot, and, you know, bring the folks in around. But twitch.tv/ClanQuest. And that's on Thursdays at what time do you start? 7 game time?
7:30, yes. 7 would be great, but I stop working at 6, so it gets a bit of a rush. So
right.
I push it to 7:30. I usually stream for about 2 hours, and we're doing that for the foreseeable future. So, yeah, I'd love to see you all there. You can. I'm very open to just discussing things with chat and asking questions. So if you want to hear me do more passionate rants, but live and with a face cam, then that's the place to go.
Ooh. Yeah, you know, and that's actually what gave me that fleeting thought the other day wouldn't it be neat to do a video show again at some point? Was actually the live stream. But
yeah.
You know, we're not at that point yet where we have the easy infrastructure to do that. But all right. As for me, I finished all the archaeology collections. I was missing 2 artifacts from a Wise Old Man collection.
Wow.
But all the archaeology collections are done. I have also redeemed 23 or 24 Red Rum 3. Pieces enough to make the Tetra compasses. So I guess it would be 3 times that. So it's closer to 75 or so.
Have you been selling your crow notes?
No, but I should, shouldn't I?
I'm just curious how many you have by now.
1.5 million.
Ooh, that's quite a lot. That's quite a lot.
And I doubled my amount from completing those Red Rum 3s.
Ooh, that's pretty good. So what do you have left now in archaeology?
I have to turn in 1,500 batteries worth of the Caridet Zaros 4.
In one go, or just in total?
Well, see, I have the artifacts completed, but I haven't turned it in because I haven't decided if I'm going to, you know, save that for a double XP event a skill of the month event or what. But it probably wouldn't be that much.
Cheeky.
But I have those 25-ish Tetra compasses to restore.
I love doing Tetra compasses.
I have, and I have two Spear of Annihilations to make, which I'm Iron Manning.
You lucky bastard.
Yeah, I got two.
Wow.
But archaeology, you know, is not done. I also went back and did the Orthon site on that. And, you know, it seems as though archaeology is good money in this day and age, especially as we approach double XP. So, But that's what I've been up to. I've also been upping the herb farming amount with double XP arriving. Fun fact, and I kicked myself for missing this one when I was training archaeology. Cadentine incense sticks will make archaeology resource hotspots have a lower chance of depleting, just like they do with trees and whatnot. So I trained all the way to 120, and I forgot about those Cadentine incense sticks. So, for anybody leveling up, and, you know, there's also going to be a push on double XP for Toad Flax, as there always is with Ceridoan Brews for people pushing 99. There's, of course, also going to be a push for Torstal Incense Sticks for people who just want to max out that the amount of XP bonus that you can get. And outside of double XPs, the Spirit Weed Incense Sticks are good for people who do PVM for the familiar timer increase. So overall, you know, lots of good stuff around incense sticks. And the way it goes with these market things, if you can't make the final product, look toward the constituent products. And the shortage on those, of course, is going to be with the herbs and with the ashes. So, you know, collecting infernal ashes might not be another bad thing to do as you head towards double XP weekend or double XP live. So just a couple of little tips here and there. But I believe that wraps up this episode of Update. I'm good. Do you have anything else?
No.
Well then, I will just say to our listeners, thank you so much for listening. And if you want to subscribe, you can do that anywhere you can get podcasts: Apple, Google, Spotify, Pocket Casts, YouTube, you name it. If you, you know, you have a favorite, or you just want some of these links to where, figure out where you can subscribe, just head on over to update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. And with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
Bye.